There was a rare firefight on the border of the Golan Heights and Syria today. Israeli soldiers killed one gunman trying to enter the Golan and captured another. In the West Bank, Gaza, and Israel itself, such violence is more common. More than 2,000 Israelis and Palestinians have been killed during the past 26 months. At least 10 times that number have been wounded, including many who were left maimed or paralyzed. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports on three people whose lives have been irrevocably altered by the violence.
Anna Weisman is a pretty young woman of 26. She has a husband who works at a health club and a two-year-old baby boy. Her blonde hair slides off her shoulder as she reaches up to shake a visitor's hand. Anna came to Israel from Ukraine 6 years ago, and the young family has struggled to make ends meet. Temporary work helped fill the gap. Shifting in her wheelchair, Anna says that's how she came to be in the dining room of the Park Hotel in Netanya on March 27th, the night of the worst Palestinian suicide bombing of this intifada. She didn't work at the hotel, but her sister-in-law knows the head waiter, and she knew they'd be looking for extra staff to work the holiday Seder meal. Anna recalls that she saw the man who turned out to be the suicide bomber and suspected nothing.
Somebody said, look, this man looks very strange. He looks maybe like a terrorist. And I said, I don't think that he does. I didn't believe her. And just as somebody approached me and asked me what was the menu for the night, I didn't have even enough time to give him the menu.
When Anna regained consciousness, she couldn't feel anything below her waist. 10 months later, she doubts she ever will. In the past 26 months, Israelis have come to believe, with good reason, that Palestinian bombers and gunmen will strike anywhere. But even in a war without clear battle lines, some Israelis feel more exposed than others. They get on the bus because they can't afford a car or taxi, and they work in the cafes and malls that are high-profile targets because any job is a good job these days. Sitting next to Anna at a rehabilitation center not far from Tel Aviv is Elad Vassa. He's 25, originally from Ethiopia. A Palestinian suicide bomber deprived him of the use of his legs in May, in the Netanya market where he used to work. He remembers bending over to pick up a few fallen potatoes when the bomb went off.
The explosion was really strong, and then everything around me seemed black. And then after maybe a few seconds, I woke up and I had a lot of nails and I had burns, and there was a strong smell of burning. And I tried three times to get up and I wasn't able to.
Inside the center, Anna's therapist stretches her muscles while Elad lifts weights to work on his upper body strength. His quick smile flashes almost reflexively when he's asked how he copes with the knowledge that he'll probably never again feel anything below his stomach.
I wake up with a smile, and I feel that that really helps me. So I try to smile, even though sometimes it's not the greatest, but that's what really helps me.
On the Palestinian side of the conflict, the stories are different in detail, but not in result. In a Ramallah medical center, 17-year-old Mohammed Zakarneh talks about April 5th, the day a bullet out of a clear blue sky sliced through his neck, freezing both legs and his fingers into immobility. It was just after midday, and the Israeli military offensive launched after the Park Hotel bombing was raging in the West Bank.
I was in my house in Kabatia, Jenin, and I wanted to go to buy some bread. And while I was walking, there was a sniper on one of the roofs that he shot me in my neck. And I bleeded for 28 hours, and they did not let anybody, any ambulance or anything, to come across near me, even people.
That's what Zakarneh was told by doctors and his family when he regained consciousness 10 days later. He learned that the ambulance that finally reached him was forced to go to Jericho because Jenin was closed. From Jericho, he went to a Jerusalem hospital and one in Jordan. But the diagnosis was the same, irreparable damage to the spinal cord. Residents of Kabatia said it was an Israeli army sniper who fired the shot. A spokesperson for the army said it's difficult to track every injury, especially from such a busy time as last spring, but it had no information on a shooting in Kabatia on that day. Zakarneh is calm and polite as he relates his story, but unlike the young Israeli Elad Vassa, he finds no reason to be optimistic.
All our ambitions are over. and all our lives, and people like me, all their lives are also over, and there is no place for us here.
Sakarna used to work as a mechanic in his father's shop, but now his father is out of work himself. He has to be here with his son, shaving him, cleaning him, and helping him get through the carbon copy days. The rest of the family is stuck in Kabatia, unable to visit Ramallah because of the military closures. The government's tally of Israelis injured in this intifada stands at more than 5,000. Conservative estimates of Palestinian injuries are more than three times that amount. Some were only lightly wounded. Others, like Mohammed Zakarneh, Elad Vassa, and Anna Weisman, have seen their lives changed forever. They'll spend their days in physical therapy, while others take their place on the buses and in the cafes of Israel and on the dangerous streets of the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Netanya.